Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am here with a woman who can apparently do everything. She doesn't like the term guru, so I won't use it, but she is a master of social media, author marketing. She's a branding consultant. She's the author of 3 best-selling books. She's a Huffington Post blogger. She washes windows. She can kind of cook with her mother's supervision, I take it. Isn't that right, Rachel?
Yeah, I try not to cook because basically, you know, we have firemen on speed dial, so, you know. Although that's a good
thing. That's a great way to make a calendar on the cheap.
Yeah, there you go. That's quite
the best thing to do.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure because I just marvel at you on Twitter. That's where, and that's where the social media aspect cannot be emphasized enough. We're going to talk about that in the second half of the show, but that's where I met Rachel, and she's freaking hilarious on Twitter. And I thought, okay, gotta check this woman out. And then, of course, Rachel, you blew me away with every single thing you do. You know, you're a best-selling author. You've got 3 books, and here's what really kills me. You've got Name Code Exposed. You've got Walk in the Snark. They're both hilarious books. They are. But
thank you.
It's how you managed the shift to a different genre, a different tone, different everything in broken pieces that really impresses me. How did you go from this hilarity? Although I have to say, in A Walk in the Snark, there were moments of real poignancy. I mean, there were moments where you dialed down that humor and you could see that potential for you to write broken pieces because I would be laughing 1 minute and then somehow you very subtly brought everything down into a place where it was more serious and then switch back to your trademark snark and humor. What was it like going from those 2 books into Broken Pieces?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I started my blog back in, gosh, I don't know, like 2007 probably, 2008, see, thank you. Really, it was more just to kind of save my sanity more than anything else. I had been writing since the age of 10, like most authors, and blogging really had just become so popular. I had stopped working full-time for Big Pharma in 2004, really wanted to focus on family and having a second child and just couldn't get pregnant. Just the stress of the job and being away from my daughter was really, really hard for me, and she was only 4 years old. And so at the time, my husband's business was doing really well. He was a sales consultant for Big Pharma, doing, you know, like massive scale training programs for like entire field forces. So we thought, okay, you know, we'll take the risk and I'll stop being a rep and I'll, you know, focus on her and doing some writing and helping him with the business. And so, you know, I got pregnant actually fairly quickly and had my son the next year. And being at home with 2 small children under the age of 5 really kind of threw me. I went into a postpartum depression. I've learned much more now as I've gotten older about how what happened to me as a child really affects me as an adult. And, of course, depression is part of that. And having children really kind of throws your hormones, of course, into, you know, craziness. But to get back to the story about blogging, it really did save me. And I think you'll hear a lot of women say that. And that is the truth for me. And the humor, I think, was probably part of me kind of dealing with the difficult parts of what was going on in my life and just turning it into funny stories. Because you have to, I mean, you have children and you have all boys. God bless you. There's a lot of funny things that happen, and there's a lot of scary things that happen being a parent. I mean, I think I was just talking to my niece who now has her own daughter, and she said, you know, I'm very casual. in her parenting, but she's got a constant watchful eye. And I think that's what we do as parents anyway. And she said, I keep my anxiety very close to my chest so that I don't put that fear into her. But it comes out, she gets headaches and she has anxiety attacks. And I think that we all sort of do that to a certain extent, that you want to be a good parent, but in some way it comes out. To her, she cooks these giant big meals, very healthy, she gardens. There are certain ways I think that it all comes out. For me, I started writing, and I covered up a lot of what I was going through with humor and sarcasm and snark, not to the point where I wanted to hurt anyone's feelings. Really, it was just a matter of, you know, oh, my God, how hard is it to change the toilet paper roll? 17 years of marriage, and I'm still changing toilet paper rolls. Like, I just got to the point where I had to laugh at it, or I would have just cried. It was 2 in the morning. I was breastfeeding. Are you kidding me? He can't change the toilet paper roll? I can't even imagine what it's like in your house.
Well, I don't even, you know, when we were in the green room, like I told you, I keep the toilet seats up out of courtesy. I mean, I'm the only female. When we have pets, they are also male. So, I mean, I swim in seas of testosterone, and I pretty much know the male mind. I mean, I just do. Their inability to see crumbs unless there are a pile of ants on there, and then they think you have an ant problem, and it's like, no, actually, friends, we have a hygiene problem. You know, because I'm warning Rachel that, like, she has an 8-year-old about to be 9, and I'm like, you've got 3 years, 4 max. That's
right.
But then again, you have to understand, from my point of view, I mean, a walk in the snark was great because they touched on so many things I deal with every single day, but you have a daughter. And I think, okay, I'm a female, and I wouldn't know. I have a granddaughter. She's only, like, 5 months old. And, like, I want her to be in potty training before I get to her because I have the same plumbing, but I would just look at the diaper and be like, what? So I really found a walk in the snark refreshing. But when you talk about depression and postpartum and all of that, I mean, Broken Pieces is kind of a study of women. It's about relationships. It's got a lot of heart. There's a lot going on that reaches out to women. And it does touch upon sex abuse, which is, it's something you advocate for. You want women to have a voice who have been victimized before. And you and Dr. Bobby Parrish host Sex Abuse Chat. So tell us a little bit about how that came together, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. Well, when I was writing, as you talked about in A Walk in the Stark, even back in that book, I was really starting to, in therapy more than anything, talk with my therapist at the time when we were still living in Southern California about what had happened when I was 11. And just, you know, a brief description, I won't go into any great detail here. We lived next door, a family moved in next door, and the father sexually abused me and several other little girls in the neighborhood. I was 11 at the time. And he was in the Army. Eventually it all came out. I testified in 2 trials. One was a civil trial and one was a military trial. And some of the girls were much younger than me and really couldn't verbalize, but there was enough physical evidence of what had happened. With me, I was 11, and so I was really able to verbalize much of what had happened. And so he was, court-martialed from his position in the military, lost all his benefits. He got 2 years in the county jail, came back. I don't know what he ended up doing after that, got some kind of, you know, regular civilian job. And then I had to live next door. My parents did not move. I lived next door to this man and his family and went to school with his kids all the way until I moved away when I started college and put myself through school locally in the same hometown. But it was the after effects almost of living next door to them and the vigilance, the hypervigilance of going to sleep every night knowing that he was still next door to me, that I think affected me more than anything else, especially having my own children. So some of this started coming out when I was writing A Walk in the Snark. Then I wrote Man Code Exposed. And as I started to write my third book, which was supposed to be Chick Speak Uncovered, and that was supposed to be for the guys so they could understand when we say things like, I'm fine,
we're not
the exact opposite. Yeah. But I just, my heart wasn't in it. And I just really felt like I needed to talk about what had happened. I knew, I started really looking at statistics. 1 in 3 girls under the age of 18 will be sexually abused. Typically, 85% of the abusers are people they know, neighbors, parents, teachers, coaches, church, clergy, which is just shocking. And for boys, it's 1 in 6. And there is a wonderful organization for men called the 1in6.org. They do believe that for men or for boys, it goes underreported just because of how we are with, with men. And a number of times, maybe 10 to 15% of the abusers are women. And so anyway, so I started looking at all these statistics, getting more into therapy and understanding a lot of my behaviors as an adult were directly affected or caused by the whole cause and effect issue by what happened when I was a kid. So I know a lot of people look at it and go, okay, it happened. My parents tended to sort of just say, okay, it happened, you're fine, now move on. But you don't realize that there are things that affect you. For example, like I did have postpartum depression, anxiety attacks, just a lot of nightmares, and I startle very easily. If somebody walked in on me right now as we're talking here, I would probably jump 3 feet. I just startle very easily. A lot of those types of reactions or behaviors are a result of those, what happened when I was younger. So I really started looking at all that. And I'm not a psychologist. I don't have any kind of credentials except for having taken a few psych 1A and 1B classes in college. So I didn't want to approach writing about it from a psychological aspect. I simply just wanted to share my story. So I've started writing essays, poetry. I've always been a poet, even back in, high school and college. And really that's what I just started doing. I worked with an editor who I've known since A Walk in the Snark, and Jessica Swift is her name. She's fabulous. And she and I just started kind of working together, and she'd say, well, why don't you kind of, look at this topic, or why don't you look at that topic? And at some point, we kind of put all the pieces together, and she said, you know what, I think we should just sort of put them in no particular order, because the book is titled Broken Pieces. And she said, I really sort of like that disjointed, uncomfortable feeling of not knowing what's coming next. Because if you think about it, most books we read are sort of chronological or linear. And we're sort of, as Americans, fed the happy ending. And she said, I don't want to do that with this book. She said, let's just throw it together, see how it works. We sent it out to the beta readers. Almost 201, they said they liked, but they didn't like the way that it was put together, because it made them feel uncomfortable. And we thought, yes, okay, that's exactly what we were going for, because that's how I felt. You don't want to feel comfortable if you're going through something horrible like that. It's not a comfortable feeling. And so that really, so we realized we achieved what we wanted with that. To anybody out there who has not worked with an editor on your book, you have to. It is such a huge part of the creative process. I can't even tell you how much I've discovered and learned about myself as a writer, and just trusting somebody who gets your work. I can't even tell you how amazing that whole part of the process is. But that was huge for me to even see that aspect of it. So I really am grateful to Jessica for her insight on that. And this book has done amazingly. And so as a result of that, the reception has been great. Survivors from all over the world have contacted me, sent me emails, sent me heartbreaking stories of incest and abuse. People have told me stories that they've never even really even admitted to themselves what happened. People have said, I thought it happened. I wasn't sure. Now I'm, maybe they've sought help. So I decided that I wanted to help people. And I wasn't quite sure how. And I'm very thankful to Bruce Sallan, S-A-L-L-A-N. And I'll tell him that I mentioned him in this radio chat. He has a wonderful chat every week on Thursdays called Dad Chat. And he's a really dedicated father. and he wanted to be a voice for dads. And he invited me to guest on his show to talk about my book and also to reach out to people who had been sexually assaulted or abused in some way. And so it gave me the idea of starting Sex Abuse Chat. It is a public forum, meaning it's on Twitter. And I wasn't quite sure how to go about doing that because, again, I'm not a psychologist. I don't claim to be. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who have either, you know, I mean, some of the very scariest ways that it can manifest is that people can, commit suicide, can attempt suicide. They can be cutting. I mean, there are some really horrible things that happen to people as a result of being sexually abused. And I certainly am not prepared to deal with that, other than to refer them to RAINN, R-A-I-N-N. On Twitter, they're RAINN01. Or to, call 911 and get some help immediately. But I was able to connect with Bobby Parrish, who on Twitter is Truth Is Hers, who is an amazingly strong woman. She is I can't say enough wonderful things about her. She's an author. She is an incest survivor. And she is a certified therapist. And I asked if she would be interested in co-hosting it with me, and she jumped at the chance. So in January, we started a weekly chat. Sex Abuse Chat is on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And she really is in charge of, getting guests or picking topics, and it's every Tuesday, and anybody is welcome to join us who is a survivor of any kind of sex abuse. And we just ask that people be respectful. It is public, so if you don't want to join, but you want to just lurk is what we call it, just watch the chat, that's fine too. And it's really amazing. It goes by so quickly, and people are very open, and I think it's the first time really that I've seen that there's been that open of a format where people can just really ask questions that they really might have been afraid to come forward and ask about before.
It's kind
so
of
I'm really proud of the work.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole concept of, you cite the study where, 85% is a huge number. And just
yeah.
The other day, I was actually watching the news, and they said 1 in 4 women, whenever they're in a parking lot, it doesn't matter where they are, they're always thinking of ways to prepare themselves in case they're attacked. And that actually blew my mind because, and this is a perfect example of what sex abuse does,
mm-hmm.
especially I do the same thing. And it's just like you said, there are a lot of women out there who think, it's just me. I'm the only one, right? And it's amazing mm-hmm. in these days and times when we get so much information from so many different outlets. It was watching that TV show, I'm 42 for pity's sake, or I'm rounding off. I will be 42 in November. But that said, mm-hmm. I had no idea. So I'm watching this whole feature about women who are literally showing the reporter how they're holding their keys so they can stab someone if they're approached. And this whole time,
yeah.
I was living in this crazy cave of ignorance and thought I was the only person who did that. So I was like, well, that's kind of depressing. So just because when you hear the figures, okay, and I know loads and loads of good men. This is not about man haters at all, or you wouldn't have even brought up Dad Chat. You wouldn't have. It's not about that at all. But it is a sad phenomenon in our days and times that has been continuing without ceasing for as long as probably humans have been around. So whenever people come forward and they tell you, oh, my God, I'm not alone, because they have to say that all the time, is that cathartic for you in any way?
You know, people have asked me that question, and I'm not sure that I can say that sharing my story is cathartic because it doesn't change what happened.
Right.
But I do feel that if I am able to help one person, and I know that a lot of people say that, it makes it almost sound cliche, right? It's really interesting. One of the to answer this in a long drawn-out way, and I apologize for that, but there's not one easy way to answer this. The second or third part, there's really three prongs of what I'm doing for the for what I call my advocacy, because that really is something that it almost sort of happens, like this path opened in front of me as a result of publishing this book. Okay, I approached Rain and I said, I would love to be able to donate a percentage of the proceeds of my book to your organization. And they said, great, we would love that too, but you have to give us $500 up front in order to be able to do that. And then once you get that in donations, then you get that back. And I was like, okay, great. If I had $500 lying around, I would love to do that, but I'm not in a position to do that. And they said, okay, well, then we can't. But you can have a widget to put on your site. And I was like, okay, great. So at least I have that, okay. Which they're still a great organization. I have nothing against them. I'm just not in a financial position to put money out before I get it back. And what I am, I'll be happy to do that, okay. So what I decided to do instead was I asked some of the people who had connected with me if they'd be interested in, along with Bobby, because she is a therapist, and again, I'm very clear and open about that. I'm not in any way trying to counsel anybody. If they would be interested in forming a support group on Facebook, and it would be private, you know, on Facebook you can have a private group and a secret group. And the difference is a private group, someone can see if you've posted. It doesn't say what you've posted, but just that you have. A secret group is nobody sees anything except for the members of the group. So I started this private secret group. There are about 60 members. I would say 55 of the members are women. The other five are male, and they have to be survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And we are there to support one another. There's no religion. There's no politics. Those are my rules because I feel that we need to just keep those types of topics completely out. There's no book promotion. There's no real, you know, personal promotion of any kind, like, hey, I'm going to have a book signing. Nothing like that. We're really just there to say, hey, I had a nightmare. I'm shaky today. Or, you know, hey, I made some cookies and, you know, here's a virtual cookie for everybody. I mean, we really can just talk about anything we want, really serious stuff, really silly stuff. We can curse. We can laugh, we can cry, whatever. And I can tell you, it has just been almost, I would say, life-changing to have this kind of really open format for people who, some of which have never shared what happened to them with anybody ever. And they know that it's a very safe place. And I screen every person before they come into the group. I ask a series of questions. And if I don't get a good feeling about them, they are not allowed in. Some people I'll refer over to Bobby because I just feel like I'm not sure, so I'll send them to her, and then we confer. So we do have quite a kind of, you know, like, almost like an interview process before somebody enters the group. And some people have just, you know, come in and said, you know, this or that about the Lord or this about Republicans. And I've just said, you know what, these are the rules, and if you can't follow the rules, we will remove you. And we've had to remove a few people because they just won't play by the rules, and there are those people out there. But for the most part, people are very respectful and so happy to have a place where there's an immediate bond. So that's really the second part of having published the book. And then the third part is I've always wanted to do some kind of a book where I've been able to build up this platform from being on Twitter since, whatever, 2009, I think. Yes. And Facebook and Google Plus and all these other places. And, you know, I want to be able to share that with people who have a story to tell but maybe can't say that on their own blog. I started doing that with – that's one of the things I did. You asked me about that in A Walk in the Snark. I started when I transitioned from telling humorous stories over to more serious stories as part of my marketing – for Broken Pieces, I asked people to share their real-life stories on my blog. And I really wanted to take that a step further and put those stories and open that up to other people, other survivors, into a book, an anthology. And Bobby came to me and said, hey, what about if we do that? We call it the No More Shame Project. And we do a whole series. One, the first one can be childhood sexual abuse. The second one could be rape survivors. The third one could be domestic abuse survivors. And maybe we do like a 5-volume set. And, you know, somehow we raise funds for it and we ask people to volunteer their time, et cetera, et cetera. So we've worked out all the details and we're actually taking submissions now for the very first volume of the No More Shame Project. You can look it up on Facebook. We have a page, or you can connect with me or Bobby. And you can use a pen name, or you can write anonymously if you just don't want people to know that it's you. And we just want to get the stories out there and to give survivors a voice. That's the most important thing.
Because it can help them a lot. I mean, just having that voice and being able, it can help them cope in ways. Because, as I said, you know, I felt alone just discovering that women are always prepared at all times. So I can only imagine the impact that would have on people who have felt so alone for so long. Like you said, I mean, really, obviously, some time passed between 11 and whenever you finally started Broken Pieces. So that's a lot of time that survivors are going without feeling that anyone else understands. So having that kind of outlet is huge. Huge. And on that note, because I never make a good segue, you need to know that, Rachel. I never make a good segue. So I'm just going to leave it awkward because people would not know they were listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown if there wasn't an awkward segue to commercial break. So when we pop back on with the lovely Rachel Thompson, we are going to talk about social media for authors. She is an absolute genius at it, and I think all authors need some of the tips that she can give. So, with that said, we're going to go to a quick break. You are listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown right here on WGGM.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and The Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister, bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Orville Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at orvillebird.com and get a hold of all of Orville's wonderful music.
Back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown, where I have Rachel Thompson, who is absolutely as charming on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and the Huffington Post and everywhere she appears in the green room as she is right here on air, which is pretty amazing in my opinion. That said, I have to speak about Bad Redhead Media, the company you started. You have I'm trying to be clean here, but you have buttloads of experience. I mean, you really do, because you worked in Big Pharma. You worked there. So social media and author marketing and branding consultant, that's what you do. And it is hugely, hugely important nowadays to have a platform if you want your voice heard. I mean, you learned that along the way, didn't you? I mean, as you started social media, you were blogging, and then you just fell head over heels in social media. So you kind of built your platform along the way.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that I always hated about being in Big Pharma, I started as a sales rep, then I went back to the home office for about 4 years. 4.5 years as a sales trainer and marketing and advertising. I loved the whole interactive aspect of it, the teaching, but the marketing, of course, but the whole sort of hard sell aspect of it, hi, doctor, will you write my drug today, was ridiculous to me. All the sales materials were very hardcore, old school 60s selling kind of, you know, stuff. And I worked for Novartis. It used to be Sibagaigi for any old school people out there. And then they merged with Sandoz and became Novartis. And I worked for them from 1989 to 2004, so 15 years. And then prior to that, I worked for Carter Wallace for 3 years. So, you know, about 18 years of experience doing that. And, you know, what I gleaned from it really more than anything was that those doctors that I interacted with on a personal level, I got to know them. I went to their homes for family picnics. We went on, you know, speaking engagements and things like that. When we spoke to each other like people, instead of, hi, I'm holding a sales aid and I'm turning pages and you're looking at nothing because you're thinking about your patient who's dying in the hospital that you've known for 30 years. And instead of me, you know, doing this rote presentation that means nothing to either of us, and instead I'm saying, hey, how's your day? And you're saying, well, my patient's dying and I'm actually having a really shitty day. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. A really bad day.
Don't worry about it. I curse like a sailor. I just try to hide it.
Okay. And I say, okay, well, you know what? I brought in some of your favorite cookies. I'm not going to do the sales thing today. And then you say to me, okay, thank you very much, Rachel. And we give each other a hug. That means way more to you, Mr. Doctor or Mrs. Doctor, than it would if I came in and said, hey, will you write my drug today? Will you try it on your next 15 patients? Because I could have just been a robot as opposed to a person who cares about you. And so that relationship selling, that relationship marketing is really what I walked away with, even though it got to the point where I was just sick. I just couldn't do it anymore because it really went against my whole wanting to do something creative with my life, and I just was done. And that's why I really started embracing selling. Once I started embracing social media, I really love Twitter. Facebook, I'm liking it a little more now. I had a kind of a tough time with it initially. I write about that in A Walk in the Snark and to an extent, and a little bit more in Broken Pieces as to why. So you have to read to find out. But I love Twitter, and I think that Twitter is a great equalizer. I can talk to famous musicians that I would never be able to talk to in real life, and I interact with them. Just one example is Jonathan Brooke. She's an amazing singer-songwriter. I've seen her live twice. I've listened to her music since the 1990s. Do you remember that show Felicity? With
yes.
What's her name? Carrie?
Everybody remembers when she got her hair cut.
The hair, right? Okay. So one of her songs was on the show, and I was like, oh, my God, I love this music. What is this music? So somehow I found the music. I Shazammed it or something, right, and started listening to her way back then. Well, now her and I talk to each other on Twitter. She bought my book, and she's reading my book. I mean, like
did you geek out or what? Because I remember mine was Katherine Ryan Hyde. That was my big one. I talked to her on Twitter, and I'm just in awe of her writing talent. And I go, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm talking to this person. I just can't believe
it.
Sometimes I feel that way with Rachel because, honestly, you have, 165,000-plus followers. And, we started talking to each other, and it is a great equalizer because I had no idea you had that many followers. I just know you were funny as hell, and I wanted
Thank
to hear
you.
More of what you had to say. And apparently
Thank you.
But then to discover you have all these followers and you're talking to me, that's like you geek out a little bit. That's all there is to it.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think that the number of followers, doesn't really mean much because a lot of those, I have to tell you, and we can talk about this specifically, I go through and I actively follow anywhere between 750 and 1,000 people almost every day using what's called Managed Flitter. And if people ask me about them, it's an Australian company. It's Managed, not Twitter, it's Flitter, F-L-I-T-T-E-R, Managed Flitter. They're at Managed Flitter on Twitter and ManagedFlitter.com. I use their paid version because I manage over 20 accounts as part of my Bad Redhead Media company. And I go in and I use keywords. So I'll put in something like, I just attended BlogHer 14. So I'll put in BlogHer 14 so I can follow the 1,000-plus women that were there. So I'll put in BlogHer 14. It'll pull up anybody who either tweeted about BlogHer 14, which was a lot of people, or someone who has it in their account bio. So all those people I can find that quickly, it'll pull it up for me, and then I can follow all those people. The only limitation, of course, is that Twitter puts, you can't follow more than 1,000 people in a day. But because I have a large account, I can follow up to 1,000 people in a day without being, suspended as a spammer. If your account is smaller, let's say you have, 500 followers, and if you follow 1,000 people, they're going to suspend your account for they think you're a spammer. So you really have to look at, I wouldn't follow maybe more than 50 or 100 people a day. You have to build up to that. Now, on the opposite side of that, I go in and I probably unfollow anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 either fakes or eggs or, people not following me back. Because what's the point? They're just taking up space. And I have all these really weird, crazy haters and trolls. We don't even have to get into that because I don't really want to talk about that. But the point is that anyone can send anybody fake followers. And I have no control over that. You have no control over that. Twitter has no control over that. And I don't really understand why that is. But if I want to go to one of these silly sites, just Google fake followers and say, okay, I want to send 10,000 fake followers to Lydia's account, and I can pay somebody $5, and they'll send you 10,000 fake eggs. And they'll be in your account in an hour. I can do that.
Second look. Because, first of all, nobody is going to – that's I would notice that immediately, okay, because I have less than one-tenth of the followers you do. And I personally go through everyone who follows me, and I look at their feed. This is exactly why one of your tips – you have this great article in the Huffington Post that just came out. I think it was the 1st of August, which, well, the title is Authors Are Assholes. But quite frankly, that's not what it's about. That is not.
No.
I'm going to say this very vehemently. That's not what it's about. As a matter of fact, it has great tips. And that's one of the things
you
do a lot. When I read the article, I thought, well, yeah, oh, yes, please. When I'm betting whoever's following me, and I follow back the vast majority of people because I love discovering new authors. I love reading their work. I love leaving reviews for great work that's often underlooked, and I love having them on the show, but you're a whale in a good way, okay? Because you're like hugely everywhere. But I will look at your feed. And if I see a feed, and this is one of Rachel's biggest tips, and I am so with her on it, if I see a feed that says, buy my book, 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 I'm not going to buy your book. I'm going to not follow you. That's it. It's no loss for me if you don't follow me back. That was just one little tip of a whole article packed full of great tips that Rachel has. I mean, social media
Thank
is amazing.
You.
I've met so many awesome authors, yourself included, on there. But you have to put some thought into it. Now, I don't know about your rules, but I have rules on my Twitter feed, which is no religion, no strong opinions, no politics, period. I want to promote other authors. And that's the other thing that I'm going to get in before this show ends. You are amazing. You're going to have to sit there and you're going to have to take it like a woman. Let me tell you why you're amazing. It's not just broken pieces. It's not just the whole entire first half of the show where you're talking about other people, where you also have Monday blogs and you also promote other authors. The focus is never just on Rachel. She shines the light on other people. And I want to thank you for that on behalf of all the people who you do it with, because that is, I think, there are so many people I have on the show who are big names like you and lesser names. And I've noticed the common thread between every single guest I have on is not just spectacular writing, which you have, but also they give back. They promote other authors. They shamelessly name drop, and I want them to on my show because I want good people to be recognized. So thank you for that. Was that, I think that's just the way you're put together. I don't think that was a conscious strategy on your part. You just thought, well, I'm not going to tweet about me all the time, so.
Well, you know, it's actually a pet peeve of mine, and it's at the top of my feed. I don't know if a lot of people realize that they can do this with regard to, you know, if you go to the me button on your at the very top of your Twitter feed, you can pin a tweet now to the top of your feed, and you can change it out as often as you want. And the pin that's at the top of my feed right now says pet peeve. Every tweet links to your own blog or book. That's all you have to talk about yourself. There's a whole world out there. I mean, and that's really one of the things I've been training people about Twitter probably since 2011. And I guess that's probably the teacher slash trainer in me from, you know, way back when I was doing it with Big Pharma. If I find a great tip or something that I feel is very helpful or user-friendly, I share it. And that's just, I guess that is part of just the built-in, you know, way that I am. But it seems to me that if you go to, I think of Twitter, people say Twitter is a cocktail party, right? If I go to a cocktail party and I say, hi, I'm Rachel, and this conversation is going to be all about me, and you can't go anywhere until you've learned everything that's all about me, and stay here, and we're going to talk about me, that person's going to run out the door as fast as they possibly can, and they're going to tell everybody not to talk to that crazy redhead who does nothing but talk about herself, right?
Right.
So that's not real life. So I just keep telling people that if you're going to be on Twitter, you need to take a look at the people that you like to read about. And are they talking? Some people who only talk about themselves are hilarious. I mean, you have to admit, like the gal that got that show, Whitney or whatever her name was,
right.
Very self-deprecating, hilarious. She's a comedian. She's really funny. I think she's great. Most of the time it's about the silly stuff she did. It's almost like Seinfeld. It was really about nothing, but it was funny. Some people excel at that, but I think that those are very, very few people who can make it all about them 24 hours, 7 days a week. I think you really need to focus on other interests, videos and, you know, cat pictures or whatever. I mean, who doesn't like a good cat picture, right? Make it about others because, frankly, I don't know, I just don't think I'm that interesting to talk 24/7 about what I do on my Twitter feed. I get bored with myself. I'm tired of hearing about myself. So let's talk about what other people
dislike
are doing.
I dislike it. I do not like saying it, except for the time I had the flu and I was outside and I thought a moth was attacking my face while I was drinking tea. I tried to gently chew it away so I wouldn't, like, chew on it or anything, so it wouldn't fly in my mouth. It was the tea tag. So that's one, but that's very rare because I love promoting other people. Discovering books is, like, my thing. And if that's not your thing, believe me, there's something that you are seeing on Twitter. And there's a great community on there for whatever your interest might be. It is a quick and easy way to find people with similar likes and interests. And frankly, Twitter is my favorite too. So we're both biased in a way towards Twitter because Facebook I endure. I love all my I love all my friends on Facebook. I adore them. They are absolutely wonderful. But I can only take maybe, you will see me once a day on Facebook, and I'm probably going to do like 20 minutes because I can't take anymore. My sons, my husband, they're used to me saying I can't take anymore, and then I leave, which I know it's awful. I know, but if there's anyone, like, because obviously, you know, I'm still at the aspiring author stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
I work out with agents, blah, blah, blah. If there was anyone I wanted to go to, I would go to Bad Redhead Media because you have the background. No, don't thank me. You earned it. I mean, you earned it. You have communications and journalism degrees, not to mention all the experience and proof positive every author can see, but you go beyond that. It's just like the authors, the latest post you have on Huffington Post, authors are assholes, which, again, disclaimer, that is not what it's about. Not only do you do this for a living, but I think your true character can be discovered in the fact that not only do you run Bad Redhead Media and manage other people's social media accounts and work with them on their marketing and branding, but you hand out free tips at every single possible opportunity. That is amazing. That is not something you see in this I have to promote myself and forget about everybody else world very much, except I think among writers. I think they're very giving. That's just me.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I started doing. Like I said, I started doing free webinars, and then I thought, you know, a lot of people, unless they took notes, really aren't going to remember most of what I said. So I started writing articles on, my own blog. And then I guess, you know, word of mouth or whatever, the San Francisco Book Review came to me and said, hey, would you like to be our social media expert? That's really what's missing from, you know, the group of writers that we have. And I was like, are you kidding? Sure. So, it's not a paid position. And this was Heidi is the owner. This was probably about 3 years ago. And so I have a monthly column there called Bad Redhead Media Says, ... And I love working with them. They're wonderful. And so I write for them. And then I've written for Indie Reader. I write weekly for bookpromotion.com. Again, I love writing for them, actually, because it's owned by Lori Colwell, C-U-L-W-E-L-L, who is a brilliant marketer for the book publishing industry. New York City based, has written several best-selling books on her own, has one of those minds where she's three steps ahead of everybody and has to slow down so that the rest of us can catch up, okay? I met her at BEA, and I was, like, fangirling her, right? I was just sitting there, like, going, I'm not worthy. And she really sort of just took me under her wing and said, hey, you know, I want to learn more about what you do. And I said, great, because I'll sit at your knee to learn a hundredth of what you know about SEO. She really just knows so much. It's really kind of insane. And she started the site and said, hey, can you be my social media girl? And I said, sure. So I write weekly for her. Again, none of these are paid. And I think a lot of people will say to me, hey, how did you get that Huffington Post gig? Like, you know, I just walked up and said, hey, can I write for you? And they were like, sure. But it doesn't happen that way. I have to say I've been writing articles on social media and author marketing for these types of sites that get good exposure, like San Francisco Book Review and, you know, several others, 12 Most and Business Community and for Lori's site for years now. None of them pay. And I think if you're in it to get paid, then you have to go a different route, and you're going to get paid very little. It's not big money. But if you want to do it to get your name out there, as I did, then I think you have to really just approach people, meet people at conferences, approach them and say, here's some of the work I've done. And eventually I think it's through the people that you meet and the connections that you make. Again, it goes back to building relationships, right? And that's my whole thing with Twitter, with Facebook. That's how you and I met. I'm not there to go, hey, Lydia, here's my book. Will you read it and review it? I'm like, hey, what's up, girl? What do you do? Let's find out more about you. How can I help you? That kind of thing. I don't think you and I have ever once talked about, will you read my book? Will you review my book? That's not even come up.
No,
I think
I just do it. That's how you get me. That's how you – I work every review article that I post, which, you know, I really – I usually work about 2 hours on them for people out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I do it for free. And I just love books. And if you're
right.
a person who has a voice like Rachel does, because her voice comes through – loud and clear on Twitter. If you have that voice, she never had to say anything to me. I liked interacting with her. I thought she was freaking hilarious. And the funny thing about Twitter, and this is why you should be on there, is because you just don't know. You do not know Rachel Thompson is around the corner. You don't know how huge she is. You just know she's funny. Oh, my God, and she's written something. I have to read that something. I have to read that something because she's never asked me to read it. I don't know why. I know that entire we should go back and erase that whole section because it doesn't really make any sense. But that is the point. For me, the people who just interact with me, I want to read their work because obviously they're not there just to shove their book down my throat. And quite frankly, on the occasions where people do come to me and say, read my book, in the beginning I did read their book. It never turned out really well. I mean, I think it's the people who have to shout the loudest who are the ones who are going to be ignored first. Do you know what I mean? If you have to shout that loud, I'm not going to pay attention.
Well, and it's a lot of, you know, it's interesting because when I'll talk to people, I'll try to be really polite. You know, the snark does come out. The snark is a monster. And the snark will say, you know, oh, my gosh, do you have anything else to talk about? But usually I try to be much nicer and say, hey, you might want to go into Twitter's help section where they have 3 pages of what constitutes spam. And what you're doing constitutes spam. And people will argue with me, like, I made it up. But what they're doing, like when you respond to somebody and say, hi, thanks for the follow, now go buy all my crap, you know, link, HTTP, whatever, buy my bullshit, sorry.
It's
that is actually against Twitter's guidelines, which everybody, all of us signed their terms of service when we created, you know, when we created our accounts. It's just nobody ever reads that stuff. But just because you didn't read it doesn't mean that you didn't agree to it. So, you know, but the thing, going back to what you were saying, I don't know if you were involved in this whole little funny discussion last night about it being the great equalizer, but I shared a Margaret Atwood quote that goes back to what you were saying earlier, how, you know, men are most afraid of a woman laughing at them, whereas women are most afraid of a man killing them. And I must have gotten probably 5 or 6 men who complained about the quote. One guy told me, oh, well, then that means that all women are paranoid schizophrenics. And I said, yeah, try being a woman walking down the street at night at 3 a.m. with your keys in your hand. Exactly what you were saying. So
right.
Then one guy who has 4 PhDs, this was hilarious. This is the only reason I'm sharing it, told me that you should no longer be sharing those type of stereotypical BS kind of quotes. You need to, stop doing that or something. So my response was, a man just tried to tell me what I shouldn't post on my Twitter, how cute, which got a lot of reaction and a lot of retweets and a bunch of people who responded to him. And I blocked him. I just don't see. I love the block button because I don't need to waste my time on a man telling me what I should be doing. And that's why Twitter, I think, is the great equalizer, because I don't have to do what somebody, some patriarchal whatever man, thinks I should be doing, because it's my Twitter. If he doesn't want to read it, he doesn't have to read it. It doesn't bother me. It's fine by me.
That's the beauty.
But it's interesting.
And that's the absolute beauty, and you should know. If you don't know about that block button, investigate it. Because I've been stunned every single time somebody has said something snarky to me. I've been on since 2009, too. I have way fewer followers, but that's okay. But it's only happened to me, 3 times, and I was absolutely stunned because I strive so hard for no negativity whatsoever. But I do quotes, and funnily enough, that's one of the occasions somebody got after me. Just know your own power.
Yeah.
You don't have to associate with bullies or spammers or any of that. Know your own power. You don't have to follow them. You can block them. And this is across the social media platform spectrum. There are always ways for you to get rid of people who are harassing you. It's not fine.
Yeah.
It's a big bummer, but the fact that you can do it is a kind of rich, sweet dessert of its own because, I get the same thrill blocking somebody who's being really rude and I've not provoked them as I do when I'm eating, a triple-layered chocolate mousse. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But we can find you everywhere, which is awesome. If you have not bought The Man Code Exposed, which is hilarious, Broken Pieces, which is poignant, and everything you should read, if you've been a victim of abuse, if you know someone who's a victim of abuse, if you suspect someone is a victim of sexual abuse, domestic abuse, anything like that, more importantly, do something about it. Call whoever you need to call to make it stop. Walk in the Snark was hilarious to me. I have 5 sons. Now, we can find these all on Amazon. And where else?
Yes. Well, I am signed exclusively with Amazon for the ebook version. And then for the print versions, BookTrope is my publisher, and they have made them available in print pretty much everywhere. So, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
Do you sign copies? Because I'm kind of a whore for signed copies. I love signed copies.
Oh, yeah. I will absolutely send you one. We'll talk about that privately. But, yes, and if I'm somewhere, I usually have copies with me, and I'm happy to sign them and take care of them that way.
So,
but, yeah, Amazon. And, again, you don't need a Kindle. As long as you have the free Kindle app, you can download the books from Amazon as well.
And if you want to read her stuff, I just Googled Rachel Thompson, Huffington Post, because I had to see what she was saying. RachelInTheOC.com, you should check her out there.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and this is huge, because I absolutely would go to her women if I ever get published. That said, BadRedheadMedia.com. Follow her on Twitter, RachelInTheOC. She's amazing. Bad Redhead Media. Participate in Sex Abuse Chat or Monday Blogs. Those are awesome. You can find her on Pinterest, on Google+, on LinkedIn. You're everywhere. Just Google Rachel Thompson, author. You're going to find her.
Thank you, Rachel.
I have to thank you so much for being on the show. Naturally, we're running out of time because there's so much to and there's not enough time to cover it. But thank you. You are just an absolute gem. You really are, no matter what anybody says.
They do say things.
They do, but I don't care because I know you and you're awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the Lowdown.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Okay, everybody, real quick, because time is running out. I never get enough of Rachel. Who could? She's just absolutely amazing. Check her out. Google Rachel Thompson, author. Just
check her out. She's amazing. Everything she says is full of snark and funny and everything you want to read. That said, because Mina Vaughn wasn't able to be here on the last show, on August the 23rd, we are going, I'm so excited, I get to interview the author of How to Reprimand Your Rockstar, How to Discipline Your Vampire, and, oh dear Lord, a third book is coming up, How to Punish Your Playboy. Absolutely amazing voice, just like Rachel Thompson. She's fabulous, and I cannot wait to talk to her. So meet us right here on the Lowdown at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on August 23rd when we will have the lovely Mina Vaughn on the show. Everybody have a great weekend remaining, and we will talk to Mina Vaughn on August 23rd. Happy weekend, all.